heard a little bit about the organ donations in general to now we're going to focus on specifically the area of live organ donation. For this, of course, we're going to have Rabbi Steinberg, who's going to present the issues, the halachic issues. And then we also have with us today Rabbi Jaffet, who is the executive director of Renewal. Renewal is a project that is in the United States, and it has an office here in Toronto as well. And we're going to hear more about it specifically. So I would like to look at this as we're going to first learn the theory, and then if this is something that works for everybody, tachlis lamaisa, we'll see how this can actually be put into actual practice. Without further ado, Rabbi Steinberg.
We are talking about live organ donation, which means that a person who is still alive can donate organs, tissues that can save lives. This is obviously limited as compared to cadaveric organ donations, which one can donate almost all organs, all tissues. Here we are limited with some organs and tissues only. And I'll just give a brief overview on the medical aspects of the donations, and then we'll discuss a little bit the halachic parts of it. So if we talk about a kidney donation, as we all know, usually every healthy person is born with two kidneys. Turns out that we can function very well with one kidney, so we have a spare kidney, and if someone lost his kidneys because of disease or because operations or whatever, and he can't live without kidneys, there is an option that each of us can give one of his kidneys to someone who has none. Both will have one kidney, and both can live very well. So there are other options for people who are in renal failure, who don't have kidneys that function. One is dialysis and the other one is cadaveric donation. Turns out that live organ donation is preferable, medically speaking, to the other two options. Certainly over dialysis, which has a lot of complications, quality of life is much reduced, and certainly kidney donation is much preferable. But even if we compare cadaveric and live kidneys, the live kidney has longer longevity than cadaveric. From the donor's point of view, immediate mortality due to the operation, maybe the numbers are even lower nowadays, but certainly it's minuscule. I always say that, at least in Israel, driving a car has a much higher percentage of mortality than kidney donation, and yet no one thinks twice and he drives. So from this point of view, no one has to think twice to donate his kidney. There are some complications due to the operation which are transient, temporary, usually takes about a month and the person recovers totally and he goes back to his life. There are probably no late complications, although there are some studies that show that after 20, 30 years, blood pressure is a little higher, but one has to take into account the age, because after 20, 30 years, anyway, the person becomes older, and it's not clear whether this change of blood pressure is due to the one kidney or due to age, but even then, it's not something that really causes medical problems. And there is almost zero regrets from donors. Even if they donated the kidney and it didn't take, or the person died earlier, or it was someone who was sick to begin with and it didn't really help him, people who do it usually wholeheartedly, and whatever happens, happens, and therefore it is almost zero regrets. If we are talking about bone marrow donation, that obviously can be an immediate life-saving procedure. People who have malignancies, leukemias, and other people who have bone marrow suppression, or after treatments that cause bone marrow suppression. There is no risk to the donor. It is replaceable, renewed, and there's some pain and discomfort for a short while, and usually it goes away, so it's a real mitzvah without any risk. It is a little different when we talk about liver or lung donation. I'm talking about live liver or lung donation. What is being done is we have five lobes of lungs, so one lobe can be taken out without really causing any difficulties to the donor. Usually it goes to a child where this amount of lung tissue is sufficient. And when we talk about liver, part of the liver is cut off from the donor and given to someone who is in liver failure. Both are growing and usually almost totally replaceable, and therefore there's no problem with losing part of the lung or the liver. However, it is a major surgery in both cases. There is some mortality rate, and there's a longer morbidity, although the recovery, if everything goes well, is full. It is a little bit more dangerous and maybe has different halachic perspectives. Now, where can we get the organs? And let's focus on kidney, because that is the most frequently encountered organ that is being donated. So the most easy to understand is genetically family related, such as a parent, an offspring, or a sibling. They are part of a family emotionally, physically, genetically. That makes a lot of sense. There can be also a non-genetically family related, such as a spouse. There are two different people coming genetically from two different families, yet they live together and they care for each other, so that also makes sense. There can be a situation of non-family at all, certainly not genetically, but emotionally related, such as a friend, a good friend. They were together in the army or in the yeshiva or the university, they know each other, and here one of them needs a kidney, the other one has a spare kidney, he can donate it. There can be also cross-donation, which is a situation where a spouse is willing to donate in his family and another spouse in his family, but they don't match. So they cross-match, and the husband of woman A is a match for woman B, and the husband of woman B is a match for woman A, and then both can cross-donate. And that also makes sense that people would like to do it. And then there's a whole host, much more frequent in numbers, which is totally altruistic, without any relations, without even knowing each other. They are not friends, they don't know each other. Someone comes and says, I have two kidneys, I want to do something good in my life, I want to donate a kidney, and whoever it goes to is fine with me. At some point in the past, I headed the committee from the National Authority for Organ Transplants, the Committee for Live Organ Donation, and a young woman comes before us and says she wants to donate to whoever is in need, she doesn't care who, she wants to donate. I asked her, what's your profession? So she brings food by motorcycle, she distributes his food, that's her job, and she is single and she has no family and she doesn't care specifically for anyone, she wants to do it. When I asked her, why do you want to do it? She said, my life is a boring life, I don't do anything good for society, and I can't do something ongoing good, let's say, take care of an older person or give tzedakah, that's not my nature. I want to do once in my life something which is very good. I'll know that I'm worth living here in this world because I did one such a good thing. So these are ideas that people have to become altruistic. Now, there are other sources, some that have no relations, but they do it for compensation. They want an income. Certain countries don't allow it, other countries allow, but they won't be compensated, but it can be done in a controlled fashion, and I'll speak about it in a few minutes. The other options are certainly immoral, illegal, and shouldn't be done, and that is organ trading, trafficking, where agents are approaching poor people and promising them a set of TV or a trip to somewhere, and they take their kidneys. Sometimes it's done even by coercion in a criminal way, such as the story was that it was done in China. People who were waiting for execution, the family was promised money for burial because the person is anyway executed, so let's execute him in a way that we can take his organs at the same time. So those are obviously illegal, immoral ways. There is an issue that, if time permits, we'll discuss. If the only person who is suitable medically to be an organ donor, whether a kidney or bone marrow, doesn't matter, but he is a minor or he is incompetent, he's mentally retarded, and he can't give consent to be the donor, and yet he is the only one that can save life. Should we take it from him or not? So these are some of the sources that make us difficult. Now, if we come to compensation, in most countries, most Western countries, compensation is not permissible. In Israel, it is permissible to compensate for expenses. They call it expenses, but it is a fixed sum. Sometimes it's much less than the real expenses. Sometimes maybe it doesn't even come with expenses. Fixed sum, it's called compensation for expenses, and that's permissible. But to compensate really for the altruistic donation is not permissible. It's illegal in Israel, and I assume in Canada as well, certainly in the United States, and in Europe they are very strict about it. So how can you, if you want to compensate, how can you compensate someone who is doing such a good deed? One way is to pay directly cash money. You are willing to donate. The kidney is worth $300,000. Here's a check for $300,000. You are saving a person, and you are getting paid for the good deed that you do. There can be also, and that is done by the recipient, direct connection between the recipient and the donor. There can be a cash money payment, but not by the recipient, in order to avoid pressure that sometimes may be beyond what the donor would have liked, but it can be by a public fund. Let's say the government allocates an amount of money. Everyone equally gets the same amount if he donates a kidney or bone marrow or liver. And it's done by the government without direct relationship between the recipient and the donor. And that can be divided into two parts. One is that the reimbursement is a significant amount of money, that people who are in need of money will donate their kidney, not because it's a good deed, but because they want to make money. Or it can be a sum that most people wouldn't do it because of the money, but once they do it, they're happy to get some compensation. There is also an option to do indirect payment, not giving cash money, but let's say a reduction in taxes or in mortgage or paying for health insurance or for education of the children. There are many ways to compensate a person who did something good. Another form of compensation, which is legal in Israel, is to prioritize. If I am donating a kidney, I'll have a priority when I'll be in need of a kidney, skipping the waiting list, and not only I, but also my family. So that if I donated a kidney, a member of my family, depending if it's first degree family or even further, will get points to skip and be ahead, and that in Israel is organized and allowed. All the rest are not allowed. So the moral standpoint of most Western societies is that organ donation should be absolutely altruistic, no compensation of any kind. We'll come back to it in a minute if it's really the right way to look at it. Now, what are the halachic issues related to live organ donation? I'm not talking about cadaveric organ donation. There, the halachic issues are very different. So it is permissible halachically, provided the donor and the recipient fulfill certain basic requirements. On the donor side, it must be something that has no significant, thank you, that has no, that has no significant risk to the donor, and I'll come back to it why this is required. There should be no significant complications and no need for long-term treatments or medical follow-up. In other words, the risk that the donor is taking is either zero or at least minimal. If it is more than minimal, and we'll discuss what it means, then the donor is not allowed to donate. On the recipient side, there has to be good success chance, otherwise why take out an organ from the donor? And that is the best and the only way to save the life of the recipient. If there are other ways that we can save his life, we wouldn't ask someone to donate. Now, what are the considerations? Against live organ donations could be the prohibition against self-damage, chovel ba'atzmo, when I am willing to give my kidney, I am undergoing damage to myself. And there is a prohibition to cause myself damage. There is also a prohibition to take risks. I am healthy. I don't need to undergo this procedure. I'm not doing it for my medical needs. I'm doing it for someone else. If I am healthy, I can't take a risk even in order to save someone else, or I can. That's the issue. There is a philosophical question, I won't go into it, if we are at all onus on our body to consent to do it. Who are we to say that we are willing to damage our body because we own our body? Probably we don't own the body. So who are you to give a consent? But that's more a philosophical question. On the other side of the coin, there is an obligation that is called Hashavat Aveda. The same way as there's an obligation to return a lost object, if I find on the street a purse that has a significant sign and I ask who lost the purse and he gives me the right signs, I have to return him, and that is called Hashavat Aveda. That's a mitzvah d'oraita. Says the Gemara that Hashavat Aveda is not only an object, but also one's own body. If you can return the body to health, that is also called Hashavat Aveda. And if this person has no kidneys and I am able to return him his health, I'm fulfilling the obligation of Hashavat Aveda. There's also an obligation, Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, if you see that your fellow man is in danger, you must do whatever is needed to save him from the danger. And if I see someone who has no kidneys, certainly he's in danger, if the way to help him is by donating an organ, so I'm fulfilling lo tamod al dam re'ech. And the general, ve'ahavta le'racha kamocha, the same way as I would like, if I don't have a kidney, that someone would save my life by giving me a kidney, I ought to do the same to my fellow men. So if we come back to Isur Chavala, if it would be a prohibition, then we can't donate a kidney because there is certainly a Chavala. So in the Gemara, there is a dispute if the Isur Lo Tachvol is only someone else, but if I'm doing the Chavala to myself, there is no prohibition. Or lo tachvol means not only the other one, but also myself. That's a machloikes. But the halacha, the Rambam, and Shulchan Aruch all pasken that there is no difference. And the issur to damage is both someone else and myself. So there is an issur to cause myself damage. Although the Shulchan Aruch says that there is an issur, but there is no punishment on it. The punishment is only if I do a chavala, if I do a damage to someone else, but if I do it to myself, I am exempt from punishment. But that doesn't mean that it's permissible. So chavala is atzmi, myself, is less than doing it to someone else, but it is still an issue. But the Rambam, interestingly, writes, לא החובל בלבד, אלא כל המכה אדם כשר מישראל, בן קטן, בן גדול, בן איש, בן אישה, דרך, ניציון או ביזיון, הרי זה עובר בלא תעשה. Now the definition of חבלה by biblical standards is something that causes a blood to come out. That is a חבלה. If I just hit someone and blood doesn't come out, then that is not a definition of chavala. Yet there is an issue even to hit someone without blood coming out. But certainly when we take out a kidney from a donor, there is blood that comes out. So it's a defined chavala. But says the Rambam, when is the issue of chavala? Only if it was done, and there are two gerses in the Rambam, only if it was done derech nitzayon, meaning by fighting with each other, or derech bizayon, in a degrading, humiliating way. So that if I hit someone, but it wasn't during a fight between us, and it wasn't to humiliate him, then there's no issue. For instance, a teacher in those days hit his pupils all the time. And there was not Isur Chavala because he didn't do it as a fighting process and he didn't do it to humiliate. He did it for education or whatever a good reason he had. So certainly, donating a kidney, although it is a chovel be'atzmo, it is not done by fighting, and it is not done in a humiliating way, and therefore it's like any other medical procedure that always, surgical procedure that always is chavala, but it's not done in these two fashions, and therefore that is permissible. Another heter is that all the isurim ben adam lechavero, if I hit someone, or if I steal from someone, or if I do some damage to someone, it is only prohibited if it is done in a way of destroying without any good purpose. So wherever there is a good purpose to what I do, there is no issue. And since giving the kidney is a good purpose, there is no issue chovel in this fashion. And certainly, according to those poskim that say that for a mitzvah you're allowed to, let's say you build a sukkah, and while you build it, you got a cut or you got a splinter or there is a chavala on yourself, that is not an issue because you did it for the purpose of fulfilling a mitzvah. So from the din chovel, it is okay to donate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as what? I skipped one.
Right.
Okay. Now, as far as taking risk to save others, so that is called מכניס עצמו לספק סכנה כדי להציל חברו מוודאי סכנה. Am I permitted to put myself in a doubtful danger even in order to save someone from a certain danger? So that is discussed in the Yerushalmi, and according to the Yerushalmi, it is permissible to put himself, to put oneself in a doubtful, dangerous situation in order to save someone from a certain risk. But apparently, according to the Bavli disagrees with the Yerushalmi. There's a whole big discussion. I won't go into it. And most poskim hold that the halacha is that you are not allowed to put yourself in any danger, even if it's doubtful, even in order to save someone from a certain danger. So if I'm willing to give my kidney to someone who is in a vada danger, the person who has no kidneys is a vada danger, but I am risking myself, maybe, in a doubtful way, according to the halacha and the Bavli, I'm not allowed to do it. So how can I be a live donor in such situations? So the answer to this is that there is a famous tshuva by the Radbaz, and the Radbaz describes a situation. I maintain that it never happened. He had an answer, so he created the question in order to give the answer. There is a famous book called Terumat HaDeshen, which was the source of the Remo from the Ashkenazi Minhogim, that the whole book is built on this premise, that he invented questions so that he could give his answers. That was a method of teaching. But even if it was a real, so what was the situation? That some ruler came to a Jew and he said, tomorrow morning I'm going to kill your neighbor Jew. I'm willing not to do it if you will allow me to sever your arm. I'll cut off your arm and then I won't kill the other person. So the Radbaz was asked, really or supposedly, can the neighbor Jew allow to cause him such a serious chavalah in order to save from vaday sakana the other Jew? Because if he won't agree, the other Jew will be killed. That was the shaila. And the answer of the Radbaz, I won't go over the whole tshuva, is that if there is a real danger to the rescuer, and he is willing to take the risk as if midat chasidut, he wants to be better than required, he calls it chasidut shel shtut. He is a shoyte. He is just causing himself a serious danger where he is not obligated to do it, even if he's going to save someone else. The problem with this responsum, and everyone brings it as a guideline, when are you allowed to put yourself in a risk in order to save someone else? The problem is that they didn't know statistics. And what does it mean, a significant risk that you are doing chasidut shel shtut, as opposed to a non-significant risk where it is midat chasidut, which is okay to do? Now, the Gemara on the posuk, lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, gives three examples. What does it mean, lo ta'amod al dam re'echa? One is that a beast is running after your friend, that you are obligated to kill the beast in order to save the life of your friend. The other one is that a robber is running after him and wants to steal from him, and he might kill him, so you have to intervene. And the third one is that you see someone drowning in the river, so you have to jump and take him out. All three examples are an obligation of lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, because if you won't do it, each of the three will die. But you are taking risks. Even if you are Shimshon HaGibor and you know how to fight with a beast or with a robber, there is still a sakona, a sofek sakona. Even if you are the best swimmer, if someone is drowning and you are jumping, who knows, you may also drown. So we see that if the risk is very small, not only isn't it prohibited, it's actually the mitzvah of Lo Tamod Al Dam Re'echa, according to the examples of the Gemara. So how is it different from the case of the Radbaz? And the answer is that these three are very minimal risks for people who can do it, whereas this is a significant risk. But how many percentages is a minimal risk, a beinoni risk, a big risk? We don't know. Now, most of the poskim currently, by the way, Rav Ovadia Yosef holds that to donate a live donor for a kidney is an obligation, is lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, because he says, and it seems very logic, that the risk of giving a kidney, a live kidney, is equal or less to the three examples that the Gemara gives. And if the Gemara calls it lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, so donating a kidney should be a biblical obligation, shelo ta'amod al dam re'echa. Most poskim, however, hold that if there is any risk, there is no obligation. It is a midat chasidut, you're doing a good deed, but it's not an obligation. Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, according to most poskim, is that you have to bother in order to save. Let's say you're driving and you see someone on the road that is injured, you have to stop, you have to call an ambulance, you have to see if you can help him, but not to risk yourself at all. That is according to most poskim. And therefore, most poskim today hold that it is not chavalah if I am a donor of an organ, and it is midat chasidut to do it, but it's not an obligation. That's why, I don't know if anyone here donated a kidney, but most people don't donate kidneys, and they are not violating lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, because it's only midat chasidut, and not everyone is obligated to do midat chasidut. So, where we stand now is that blood and blood products is obligated because there's no risk. So that is lo ta'amod al dam re'echa. If you match someone who needs bone marrow and he's going to die unless he gets the bone marrow that you are a match for, if you don't give it, it's lo ta'amod al dam re'echa. And you are not risking anything. So therefore, that is an obligation. But a kidney, as we just finished the discussion, according to most poskim, is only a noble deed. Liver and lung is already a higher risk, and therefore, probably, it is usually not permissible unless there is a very strong call to do it. Now, if we come back to the compensation issue, the halacha is Ma'ani bechinam afatem bechinam. The same way as Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah for no compensation at all, so we are obligated to fulfill all the mitzvahs and not be compensated. But imagine who will be a rov of a community, a teacher in a school, a dayan in a court. All these people get salaries, and some of them get nice salaries, right? They are teaching Torah, they are ruling, they are judges, which is a mitzvah, and they should do it for no money. How come they are getting paid? I am a physician, I'm being paid quite nicely, and I'm doing a mitzvah of saving life. How can I get a salary? The answer is, et la'asot la'ashem, heferu toratecha. If the condition is such that if I'll be strict with fulfilling the mitzvah, there will be no Torah, then I'm allowed to violate Torah. Heferu toratecha. So you won't find enough people to be teachers and rabbis and rosh yeshivas and ramim and so on unless you pay them. So if you decide to go strictly with the law that you can't pay them, you will lose much more than just violating this principle. And the same with a physician, with a fireman, with a policeman, all are doing mitzvahs. They should have been doing it for free, and yet all are compensated. So the question is, why is this exception for live organ donors? That's the only good deed that society requires people to do for no compensation. Why is it different than any other good deed that people do? There are officers in the army that risk their life, they get a higher salary for it. There are physicians, there are nurses, there are many people who are doing good deeds, and no one expects them to do it for no money. Why should such a donor do it only altruistically without any money? So the official reason is that if a live donor would be compensated, then only the poor will become organ donors, and the rich will be the recipients, because they don't need the money, so they don't need to ask for donation, to be donors. The poor want to make a little money, so they'll become organ donors. But the question is, if this is the situation and we are not compensating, are the poor less poor? Are the rich less rich? Did we change anything in society by the fact that we didn't pay the poor for organ donation? It doesn't change anything. Whoever is poor, and whoever is rich is rich. The fact that you compensate doesn't really make them less poor or more poor. On the contrary, if they are poor and they are doing something good, help them not to be so poor. What's wrong with it? Obviously, if the compensation will be so high that even a person who would never in his life be willing to be a donor, but for so much money he would do it, then the consent is not a real consent. But we're not talking about such monies. We are talking about reasonable compensation like any other person who is doing a good deed. I don't understand why ethically it should be a problem. But what was found when it was done illegally, let's say in India or in China or in such places, that they came to people, they said, be an organ donor and we'll give you $1,000. So such a poor person says, why not, takes $1,000, gives the kidney, buys a TV or a little car or something, wastes the money, and then he's left without money and without a kidney. So that is really not socially a good thing to do. Therefore, I propose to the Ministry of Health that there should be no relationship between a recipient and a donor, so that there will be no pressure, I'll pay you under the table more, I'll or whatever. It should come from a fund of the government, and it shouldn't be cash money. It should be a compensation that is worthwhile to the donor in a reasonable way, and he did a good deed and he's being compensated. For instance, he'll get a few points in his taxes to pay a little less, or he will get points for education of his children or for health insurance. This is very worthwhile. It is a nice assess of the society that thinks that they did a good deed, and it doesn't reduce from the importance of the good deed that he did. Why should this be the only exception of a good deed that should never be compensated? In fact, halachically, all poskim agreed that it can be compensated. It's the same eferu toratecha like being a ram or a sheshiva or a physician. It doesn't matter. We shouldn't do it. We should do it for free. But since we are not doing it for free, that is not different than any other good deed that people are doing. And therefore, I really don't see a good reason why not compensating. So these are some of the issues related to live organ. The Renewal Group is doing a terrific job in North America. We have in Israel an equivalent group called Matnat Chaim. And I voluntarily, I don't take money, I serve as the head of the ethics committee of Matnat Chaim. And there are ethical questions that come up with the good deed of people who are altruistically donating organs. There are questions of priority, of the recipients, who get first, there's a list, can you skip the list, can you choose someone or actually not choose someone on the list, especially has to do, it's a delicate situation when Arabs are high up on the list and someone says, I'm willing to donate a kidney, but not to an Arab, so you have to skip him. So it's a major problem, legal, but we solved it in several ways. The question of who is the recipient without disclosing the name, because that's only if the recipient wants. Sometimes they want to meet. But for instance, he can be a rapist, a murderer, and no one wants to donate to him. So I want to know, who am I going to give it? Does he have a clear bill of behavior? Is it a terrorist? And there are many such issues that we are dealing with on an ethical format, but at the moment, in Israel, Matnat Chaim reached 1,300 donors, live organ donors. Some couples, both the husband and the wife, donated their kidneys, and now it is the major source of kidney donation, much more than cadaveric kidneys that are now less than live organ donors. That really took well, and I'm sure we can hear from Renewal what the situation is in North America. Thank you.
The Gemara conflict between Yerushalmi and the Bavli. Does anyone try to explain it that the reason Reish Lakish would go is because he was a trained gladiator and therefore he was an exception to the rule, since he could confidently walk in? Otherwise, how do you explain a fireman running into a building if he's not sure if somebody's there?
Right. So you're right that Reish Lakish was a listim. He was a strong person. He knew how to fight, but this didn't come up by any of the poskim as a reason why the Yerushalmi justified Reish Lakish. It seems like the Yerushalmi justified it because that's the true act. Now, the Bavli doesn't talk about it specifically. So it's not clear if the Bavli disagrees or he just didn't discuss it. But the fact that the Bavli didn't discuss and Reish Lakish was known to the Bavli seems like the Bavli disagreed. That's the feeling of the poskim. But you're right that Reish Lakish is not an incidental name in such a situation, but it's not brought up as a reason.
With respect to the compensation, a number of countries that do allow certain forms of compensation, but also with a number of other areas, including plastination of bodies, and a variety of other things, the real ethical problem arises because once you allow it, you create an international market for organs, or in the case of plastinated bodies. And what we've seen with that is even if it's very regulated, you still end up with many people who are either killed or organs harvested in a variety of ways, or real social pressure. So it's not necessarily a problem within Israel itself, but as soon as you allow it anywhere, we've seen these kinds of things really. The international market, once it's created, it goes off the rails.
But that's exactly the point. Even today, when it is not allowed to compensate, there is a trading. We know. So I don't think logically that if you allow compensation the way I suggested, not to pay money, that will not increase the trade because someone in a different country won't get tax deductible there. You will get it only here. So you can really create a compensation system that will not be different than the situation now with this faulty acts where it is not permissible. I don't see that this will make a difference.
Thank you, Rebbe, for your talk. Also, in case of Vadai Sakana, we had a few years ago an officer who jumped over a grenade to save the lives of many others and save his soldiers. Yonah Navi said, Sauni v'atiluni elayam. He said, threw me to the ocean in the storm, so to save the boat.
Right.
So we do have that situation of someone who was willing to give his life, literally, to right. save others.
Right. So certainly there's no such obligation.
Yeah.
In other words, if Roy Klein would have asked us, should I jump on the grenade to save others, we would have said no.
Yeah.
He did it because he thought that was a good deed, and obviously he is to be praised for.
But according to Radbaz, a chassid shoteh. Is that the case?
Yeah, but probably halachically, if you talk, it's a very nice deed, and it's hard to say to blame, but halachically, it wasn't the right thing to do. He's not allowed to kill himself. You know, there's only one exception, and that is Sheva ben Bichri. If there's a person who is going to be killed anyway because he did something wrong, and he is willing to give up himself in order to save others, because he is anyway going to be killed if he's caught, then it's permissible. That's the story of Sheva ben Bichri. But anyone else, including Yonah Navi, that says, kill me, in order for you to be saved, that is problematic, purely halachically speaking.
Okay, first of all, it was a great talk. You mentioned that minors and children, let's say with Downs, can't donate, but what if you do have a child that's a perfect bone marrow match, and let's say it's an infant? In fact, you probably heard the case about a child who did need a match, and none of the kids were a match, and they couldn't find a match, so then they had another child. And as soon as that baby was old enough to donate, the baby did so. And that of course, did save the child. I shouldn't say of course, but it did save the sibling's life, and they remained extremely close and had a special bond. But that sounds like that wouldn't have been permitted in halacha.
No, right. So first of all, there's a distinction between an act that endangers the minor and an act that doesn't endanger. Bone marrow donation is not endangering the donor. So it's only the formal consent, yes or no. So if you talk about formality and you know that you can save life, then you forego the formality. That is acceptable halachically. We are talking about a donation that may endanger the donor, either now or later. Here, you need a real consent. And if it is a minor or mentally retarded, he can't give a consent. There was a case, a very tragic case, where a father in renal failure took care of a son who was already old by age, but he was very mentally retarded, and he couldn't give a consent. And he was a match for a kidney to his father. And the father requested to take his kidney to save his own life. And he said, it is not only for my benefit, it's for his benefit, because if I'll die, no one will take care of him. If I'll stay alive, he will stay alive. So it's for his benefit. And yet the Supreme Court ruled against it, because that is a way that the consent doesn't exist. And in this case, if it may harm, you can't do it. The judge that ruled this ruling was Menachem Elon, who was a big Talmid Chochem on his own. And he discussed with me a little bit the pros and cons on that, and he finally decided to rule against. After a while, the father died because there was no kidney to match. And after a very short time, the son died as well. No one could take care of him, and I don't know if he ran into the street or something, and he was killed. And he called me up, Judge Elon, and he said, I regret my psak, because really, the fact that this child could have been saved together with his father, and we couldn't foresee what will happen, but it could have been foreseen, I would have ruled differently if I would know it. So I think that there is a side to say that even if there's not full consent, if it's a minor risk, it may be allowed. Yet many of the poskim say that for a kidney you need a real consent. You can't do it unless you have a consent. Maybe in exceptional situations where there's no other match and you can't look for it. Nowadays, with such altruism like renewal and matnat chaim, probably a kidney can be found and not take it from a disabled person.
I'm going to ask Rabbi Jaffe to address us a little bit about the renewal organization. So once again, Rabbi Jaffet comes to us. He's the executive director of Renewal Canada. And Rabbi Jaffet.
Thank you very much. First of all, a big thank you to Rabbi Professor Steinberg. It's an honor to share a microphone with you. And thank you for your Torah insights. Thank you to Rabbi Kellerman and to Dr. Friedman for inviting me here to speak with you tonight. And thank you to all of you, or this afternoon, for being here. I really do appreciate it. When Laser asked me to speak, I don't remember if he said 45 minutes or 425 minutes. But I figure Safik Durban Lahakal will err on the side of caution. We'll keep it short and we'll be open to questions afterwards. My name is Yonason Jaffet. I have the honor of being the executive director of Renewal of Life Canada. By a show of hands, who here is familiar with Renewal of Life, what we do before? Fantastic. Most people. Excellent, excellent. So for those who aren't familiar, what we do is we help Jews who are in end-stage renal failure find altruistic kidney donors, save their lives. When I was 12 years old, my own father was diagnosed with polycystic kidney disease, and for about 7 years I saw him suffer on dialysis and eventually succumb to his illness. I was in university at the time, I was studying human biology and planned to be a good Jewish doctor, but I disappointed everyone and became a rabbi instead. When my family and I were living in Eretz Yisrael, studying Kolal, my wife showed me a little advertisement in one of the weekly circulars. It was about 1 centimeter tall by 2 centimeters wide, and said, mother of five needs a kidney, call this number. And she said, do it. I said, okay. So I called, started going through the process. It's a bit of a hassle, especially if you don't have a car, schlepping all over Israel. And eventually, it was turned out that I did not match her, but we came back to Canada, and I found out that a good friend of mine, Shlomo Anhang, had donated his kidney here through Renewal. Now, Renewal at the time only existed in America, and so he had to go over there to do a donation. It was very difficult and taxing, and obviously there's a lot of liability that came with that. So he started Renewal of Life in Canada to help facilitate the donations for people here to make it a lot easier. In 2019, I was matched with a fellow in the community who needed a kidney, and then COVID happened. The Ontario hospital system shut down all kidney transplants. They said it was not apparently a necessary surgery, and Bezrat Hashem, I'll be donating soon. Still waiting for them to kind of get back up and running. Renewal USA has done almost 1,000 transplants right now. They started in the early 2000s. And like I said, Renewal Canada was started really so that the Jews in Montreal and Toronto and everyone else in Canada would be able to navigate the system here without having to go across the border. Essentially what we do is three services completely free of charge. The first is Shadchanut. We run a general kidney drive in the Toronto community, in the Montreal community. We try to find people who want to generally donate their kidneys. Baruch Hashem, we did this a few weeks ago during Parshas Kedoshim. As we discussed, the Pasuk says, Lo Samad Adam Re'echa. We had 18 Rabbanim, different shuls across the city, talk about what we do and the importance of kidney donation. And we had about 4 dozen community members come out to sign up, to become donors, to swap, see if they could find matches. The other thing we do within that is we help individuals specifically tap into their own communities. So if someone comes to us and says, I need a kidney, one of the things we do is we sit down, we create a social media campaign with them, we launch a website for them, we help them tap into their friends and family networks, we run live events in their synagogues, their offices, anything we can do to help them find a donor. What makes Renewal really unique is that we have our own dedicated lab testing facilities, so we can do cheek swabs and receive back blood types and HLA data, and we have a newly updated computer system now that helps us recommend the very best shidduch for every patient. So that's the main thing that we do. The other thing we do is we have a patient donor coordinator, and so we help the kidney patients and the donors navigate the medical system. It's not easy here in Canada. There's a lot of bureaucracy. In the States, the hospitals love working with Renewal because we basically bring them hundreds of thousands of dollars from their insurances. The hospitals here don't like us so much because they feel that we are this religious extremist organization, elitist, only helping our own. But that's the navigation part that we do. We also provide guidance and support throughout the whole journey, because as you can imagine, when someone is on dialysis and their body's failing, it can be very difficult. And someone who's just coming out to donate doesn't really know what they're doing, they need help as well. Thirdly, we raise funds to make sure that the heroic donors don't have to spend a penny on their transplants. So that means that we pay for their trips to and from the hospital. Sometimes that's a cab ride in the city of Toronto. Sometimes that's flying them from somewhere else. We provide care in the hospital for them as well. We take their families back and forth. We cater food for them. We provide babysitters. In one case, we actually had to take care of someone's dog for a while. You name it, any ancillary expenses, and of course, compensation for time off work as well, so remuneration for lost salary. We do this a little bit in conjunction with the province of Ontario. There's a program here called Preload, where they cover some of the costs, and we make sure that all the other costs are covered as well. In general, we've been quite successful at finding kidney donors here in Canada, but there are exceptions. We had an amazing case recently of a woman whose PRA level was so high that only one in about 10,000 people would be able to match her antibodies. So we didn't find anyone here in Canada, and the hospital, UHN, figured she's never going to find anybody. But we opened up our database to the United States, and we found an American who matched her. It was an amazing thing. We flew him in multiple times for all the testing. We flew his family in. We got him a hotel stay. We took care of everything for him. And Baruch Hashem, it was a big success. Some of you might know him. He is the rabbi at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, Rabbi Dr. Jason Weiner. So he was here with us just a few months ago. Now, I want to tell you some of the kind of side benefits of kidney donation. Some people realize, some people don't realize, but it's good to kind of think about some of these things. So one is the spiritual, the psychological rewards. I think we all know the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Kol Makayim Nefesh Achas Mi'Yisrael, Ma'ale Lov HaKosuv, Kilu Kiyam Ma'olam Ma'ale. Anyone who saves a Jewish life, it's considered as though he saved the entire world. And if you universalize that just a little bit further, just realize there's a kidney waiting list, right? So every time you take a person off that, every single person is getting bumped up one spot. Secondly, the donors get vetted extremely well by the medical teams here. I know for myself, went to doctor after doctor after doctor, checking every little tiny blood thing. We get an MRI, and they make sure that you are completely healthy before you do this. One of our donors-to-be actually went through this process and found out that she had cancer, and they saved her life. They took out the cancer, so they had this amazing check. So between that and I think the spiritual schusim, to be sure, probably explains why kidney donors have a statistically longer lifespan than average. Another side benefit, and this is something that Professor Steinberg alluded to, is that anyone who donates kidneys automatically bumped up to the top of the recipient list if they need one, and the renewals policy is to extend that to their family as well. So I think of this as kind of kidney failure insurance for you and your loved ones. So for the medical professionals here, you don't need me to explain dialysis and the struggles and the terrible toll it exacts on the patient's life and their family life, etc. But what I need from you is to spread the word. We need to encourage all Jewish patients to come to renewal if they need it. Tell your friends who are doctors about this. Tell your friends who are nephrologists or GPs, family doctors. Let everyone know what we are doing. Lastly, I'd like to remind you that literally everyone can donate. It doesn't matter how old you are or how healthy you are. Relatively healthy people between 18 and 75 can donate their kidneys, and other people can donate money. There's always something to do. Each transplant costs us about $18,000, and we never take a penny from the patients themselves to avoid any sort of ethical issues. Our dream at Renewal is to kind of flip the transplant waiting list on its head. Instead of having sick patients wait around to get a kidney, our vision is to have a long list of healthy donors who are waiting around to give someone else a gift of life. So please partner with us in our mission any way you can. Send us donors, send us recipients, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions. So, I mean, if they're coming to us, I mean, most everyone on our list is Jewish. So we will give to a Jew. But we also have non-Jews who come to us for help, and we help them as well. So usually that means helping build them a website, social media campaign. We had one very recently for a non-Jewish fellow whose father-in-law happens to be the chazan of a reform shul over here. And we did a thing. We found a bunch of people who wanted to donate to him. So we help everybody. Yes?
Who is a Jew?
Who is a Jew? if we're not sure about that, we'll have to ask our local halachic authorities. We use the Psak Halacha of Rav Noach Oilbaum in New York for all of our halakha questions. But as you can imagine, general, it's someone who has a Jewish mother, who had a Jewish mother, who had a Jewish mother, etc. Or halakha conversion, of course. Any other questions?
Are there any statistics on a person who has been a donor that they then get some kind of kidney disease and need to be a recipient?
I can't really tell you the statistics, but I can tell you about different types of kidney diseases. So something like polycystic kidney disease is genetic. Donating a kidney is not going to stop you from doing that. And of course, you're extremely well vetted before you go through the process, right? Other times, kidney failure is because of cancer, so that can or cannot happen. But as you probably know, most kidney failure is bilateral, happens on both sides, so it's not like you would have had one otherwise. The only time we really see one kidney failing is through trauma, through a car accident or a severe kickboxing accident. So we recommend anyone who donates not to go into professional combat sports afterwards. That's about it. So then you can tell them that's not a worry. And if you need it, then you'll be bumped to the top of the list also. But yeah, it's usually bilateral. Whatever happens to one side happens to the other side. Go ahead.
Do you accept donors whose family members are already on the waiting list for a kidney?
Meaning?
Like, in other words, someone is incentivized because they know their kid is on the list already, or their brother's on the list, so they're going to donate.
Are you talking about a financial donor or a kidney donor?
No, a kidney donor. Did you say family members get plumbed to the top of the list? So if they're already on the waiting list, will you accept your family members on the waiting list already? My daughter's on the list already.
To receive a kidney?
Can I donate my kidney and she'll get up the list?
Well, you could just donate to her directly.
So
she's not a match. Something we have here in Ontario is called the paired donation program, and similar to what we saw before, the idea is that basically two people go to the hospital system. One says, I need a kidney, and one says, I want to donate a kidney. We're not a match. So they get put into this big pool of other people, and then it kind of becomes a chain reaction. So let's say it's a husband and wife. So husband A ends up donating to wife B, and husband B donates to wife C, and then husband C donates to wife A, and that type of thing. We got to figure it out. And I think in Ontario, they do it about 3 times a year. They kind of collect people. If you actually go in the paired donation program, it might speed things up. You don't always necessarily get the best match. They think it's the best match because then you have a larger pool. We actually have a larger pool of donors, though, within Renewal North America, and we also have much more advanced testing now, which is really cool. You had a question.
It's less of an issue in Canada or perhaps Israel, but doesn't kidney donation impact your life insurance rates or medical insurance rates?
Not that I know if you're in Canada.
No, if you're in Canada, I don't imagine it would, but in
States, America?
I don't know if somebody, like your partner organization in the U.S., that's something I would personally be concerned about, but it's a big issue.
I've never heard of it impacting, and like I said, I don't know why it would impact, just because it doesn't make you any more likely to die. In fact, statistically speaking, kidney donors live longer than average. So maybe they had a discount, I don't know.
When you have those paired donations, it sounds like there would be a chance that one of them would back out. So are they done the same day so there's no backing out?
Yeah, they're done basically all the same day. I mean, it depends how many there are exactly, but yeah, it's kind of back to back to back. It's a really cool process that the province of Ontario does. In general, though, the hospitals really want us to advocate for paired donation. What we've noticed is that it doesn't work so well for our community. Because usually what happens is Bob needs a kidney, and a bunch of people want to come donate to Bob, and so it's a direct donation. And I'm not sure if you know, but statistically, as long as you have the same blood type, odds are you'll be able to donate to the person. It's not like bone marrow, which is a very high level. Unless the individual's got a very high PRA level, they have a lot of antibodies, then it might be a problem, like in the case I mentioned with Dr. Weiner. But in general, it's really just kind of direct donation. And so that's what motivates people. Very few people just come and say, hey, I want to give away one of my kidneys. Most people come and say, hey, I want to give a kidney to my friend, my neighbor, my fellow Jew. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much again. Please spread the word.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Japhet. Really insightful. So that closes our program for today.